we are right back into the action. Oh, another day of the week. Welcome to the Monday edition of Before You Bet right here on the Covered YouTube channel. Make sure you smash that subscribe button right down there. So once again, I love coming on the show and starting saying this. We are coming off of another winning show last Friday. So we're going to try to bring that winning energy right into today. It has easily been my best NFL season ever, up over 30 units on the season. So we will try to finish strong here as we are now fairly deep into the second half of the season. So maybe not the sexiest looking game here tonight, Vikings Bears, but I think some great betting opportunities. So we're going to have four bets for that game. We're going to get into some college football. Then at the tail end of the show, a couple of best bets for the NBA tonight. Let's bring in my guy, my first guest of the day, the king of the same game parlay. Here at he is modest. He's been crushing the SGP game for us here at Covers. J-Lo, how you making out?
Doing okay. Really good Thanksgiving Day. We got another one there with the Cowboys SGP, and then crash and burned on Sunday. Not a great day. I knew it was coming. Gambler giveth, gambler taketh away. It's all about balance.
That is the way she goes. Okay, so we got some bets to get into and some things to discuss. So let's get right into it. I will hit lead off for us with a little bit of a weirdo bet here to get us started. A first quarter bet for Vikings Bears. Give me the first quarter under 7.5 points. Weird bet, but hear me out. Vikings are 10-0-1 to the first quarter under this season. That's right. They haven't gone over a first quarter total this whole season. Their defense, great starts for them. They haven't allowed a first quarter touchdown in six straight games. They're allowing just 3.3 first quarter points per game. Now, you might look at this number and say, oh my God, Joe, 7.5, that is low. Yes, it is. However, the Bears have actually gone under this number in the first quarter in four of Justin Fields' last five starts. For what it's worth, when these teams played in Chicago in October, the Vikings led 3-0 at the end of the first quarter. So pretty much a trend play, a couple stats there to back it up. So under 7.5 in the first quarter, Monday Night Football. J-Lo, let's go to Prop City. What are we looking at here first?
All right, first stop in Prop City, we're going with Khalil Herbert to go over 10.5 yards receiving for the Bears. Now, Herbert is going to be the running back one tonight. He's going to get a lot of snaps. He's going to get a lot of touches and looks because Foreman is out tonight. So that automatically bumps up his workload. And then he's been great at as being a pass-catching running back for them when he's been on the field. He had an ankle injury that took him out for a few games there. He's been working his way back. But if you look, he has 89 yards receiving on the season, and 79 yards of those have come against other blitz-happy teams when he played against like Tampa Bay and in Green Bay. He's been catching a lot of passes as that pressure release for the quarterback and a check down option. And then player projections for him all sitting above 10.5, pretty high ceiling here as well too. And we have seen Minnesota get burned. They've been great against at stopping running backs on the ground. However, they have given up a lot of receiving yards, and this is a very blitz-heavy defense, the most blitz-heavy defense under Flores as well, too. You know all about that, being a former Miami DC.
Indeed.
So they love to bring the heat, and I think Fields is going to look to Herbert to be that pressure release when they do, and he'll pick up those yards after. And we've seen, like I said, seen the Vikes being burned by pass-catching running backs recently.
Indeed. Okay. Live chat. Darren Folks, he actually placed that bet in the live chat before you gave it out. So he is on board with you. So you have the support of Darren tonight. So I'm sure you're feeling pretty good about that. Guys, if you're watching live right now, hit up that live chat. Let us know what your best bets are for the Monday Night Football game, the NBA, the NHL, whatever you like. Share it with the people out there. Let us know what you like. Okay. Let's keep on rolling on our trip to Prop City here. I'm going to target the Vikings running back, Alexander Mattison, in the receiving yard game as well. I like to go over his total of 10.5. So the Bears are awful versus running backs in the pass game. They're allowing 63.2 yards, receiving yards per game to running backs. That is the worst in the NFL. He had a season high 7 targets in week 6 in that game against the Bears. He did catch 4 of them for 28 yards. And a big gap in snap count between him and his backup, Ty Chandler, last week, 48 snaps to 23, favoring Madison. I think Madison will continue to see more time on the field, and that's going to open him up to more targets, whether it's a design pass play or maybe Josh Dobbs improvising at there, dumping one off to him, might just take one catch for him to go over this number. Okay, J-Lo, final bet for Monday Night Football. What are we looking at here?
Looking at more receiving props. Pile them on here. 60 and a half yards receiving for this one. I love DJ Moore. I love his versatility as a wide receiver because he's a guy that can beat you deep, but also too, he's just as good in the short pass game and being able to pick up yards after the catch. And when you play a team like the Vikings, brings a lot of pressure. It doesn't allow a lot of time for the quarterback to get, allow those downfield plays to develop. But I think Fields is going to find more on these short ones. And then he's great at picking up the yards after the catch. And what do the Vikings give up a ton of? They give up a ton of yak because of that aggressiveness. And then he thrives when Fields is under center. We saw him have 96 yards last week in Fields' return. These two had an automatic connection early on this season when they were on the field. And many of the player projections calling for 70-plus yards for Moore. And this is a guy, too, that hasn't played a lot of indoor games because of his time in Carolina and where he's playing now with Chicago. But when he comes indoor, we see a significant uptick in his production, over 17 yards per reception. It's almost four more yards than his yards per reception outdoors. And they're coming into that fast indoor track in Minnesota. So I like him to go over 60 and a half receiving yards tonight.
Okay, there we go. Sounds like a 4-0 night from J-Lo and I. Kyle Godsey weighing in the live chat. Anytime touchdown for Dobbs tonight? Yeah, I could absolutely see that. Hopefully not in the first quarter, though, because we got the first quarter under here tonight. Okay, J-Lo, let's play a game of our new game, Your Take on My Take. I'm a guy who has a lot of takes. Some of them turn out to be pretty good. Some of them turn out to be god-awful. So I got a couple of takes here to share this week, and we'll get your take on my take. So hot on the heels of Frank Wright getting fired. I had this take before he actually got fired. I came up with this one watching the Panthers play the Titans yesterday. I was paying attention to that game because I had the under on it. Thankfully, that came through for me. But in the NFL, stop hiring head coaches who are just fired as a head coach of another team without having any success there whatsoever. We saw this a couple of years ago with Adam Gase going from the Dolphins, getting fired by them. The Jets couldn't wait to sweep in and hire him for some reason. It's not a recipe for success. The head coach has proven in that previous spot that they cannot get it done. Frank Wright had a lot of time with the Colts. I know some bad luck with Andrew Luck retiring out of nowhere, essentially. So maybe he did get a raw deal there, but still he had an opportunity to prove himself. It didn't really work out. Now you could argue that he did get a raw deal here in Carolina. The owner, they picked the wrong guy quarterback. The owner needs to show more patience, but J-Lo, just we'll get your opinion on the Frank Wright getting fired specifically, but this pattern that we do see it from time to time, a head coach who hasn't had any success gets fired from one team. Another team swoops in and hires them right away. I think that's a recipe for failure. What do you think of that pattern that we see once in a while in the NFL?
I think it all depends on the organization. If you look at, I mean, Carolina, for the longest time, they had like two head coaches in their first 25 years of existence. You look at a team like the Steelers, they've had like Bill Cowher and Mike Tomlin for the last, seems like, 30 years. And that might be accurate. But I think that you have two different ways of looking at this. Everyone wants to go find the next Mike McDaniel, the next Sean McVay. And we've seen that, but no organization really wants to risk being wrong. They don't want to be, you know, they want to go with the proven product. And that's why you see a lot of these retreads in terms of defensive coordinators and head coaches and offensive coordinators, seeing a lot of guys getting jobs because they know that they can do it at the pro level. For every McVay and McDaniel, you have a Cliff Kingsbury, you have a Matt Rhule, you have an Urban Meyer, who was a great college coach. And some of those guys remain great college coaches, but they just can't cut it at the pro level. So I think a lot of it is just there's some apprehension. Some front offices don't want to take the risk going beyond the pro level. And then for the Frank Reich thing, just talking about that, I absolutely think he's getting a raw deal here. They stripped this roster of its three best offensive players. And if you look at last year, Sam Darnold was, and I think I've said this before, Sam Darnold was making it rain out there for Carolina. They traded DJ Moore in that deal with Chicago to get young. And then they traded away CMC at the end of last year for San Francisco. And then this defense, which is kind of the strength of this Carolina team, they had injuries up and down, front and back, all year. Now they're finally getting guys back. Like, their secondary was down to third and fourth string guys. now they're finally getting guys back on defense, and Frank Reich gets canned. So I don't agree with the move. I think he's a good head coach. Just you gave him nothing. I think I said in a chat today, it's like they gave him a 97 hatchback with square wheels and expected him to win the Indy 500. And, you know, that division was ripe for the picking. I think you could have stuck with it and kind of built that team, but it's too late now. So I could see why teams rush to grab other head coaches that are, because they're a proven product to some with some success at the pro level. They don't want to risk it.
Yeah, that's not an attractive head coach opening either, especially when you compare what else might be out there.
When the you Bears know the ownership, like the ownership is just...
There's no patience. So it's a revolving door for head coaches, and you look at the Bears' job is probably going to be open. I know a lot of people like Justin Herbert. The Chargers' job, you got to assume that's going to be open. So what is the plan of attack here for the Panthers' owners? Are you going to give Harbaugh a blank check? Maybe. I don't think Belichick's going to be swayed by money. He's trying to get that record for most wins ever for a head coach. So
I could see them with that group. And as a Cowboys fan, I know Dan Quinn is going to be like the coach everyone wants this year.
Okay.
Given that the strength of that defense, I could see DQ going back there. Like he knows that NFC South from his time with Atlanta. I would much rather him be the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys than Mike McCarthy right now.
Okay, take number two is that the New York Jets are once again being set up to fail here in 2024. So why do I say that? Well, the coaches on the team who are absolutely awful, and Robert Saleh, who cannot manage a roster, who cannot manage a quarterback position, him and Nathaniel Hackett, they're both awful, but they're going to be given a complete and total mulligan because of why? Because of Aaron Rodgers getting injured in that first game. So they're going to try to do it all over again here in 2024, and they're once again putting all their eggs into that Aaron Rodgers basket. That's what they did this year with his supporting cast. Essentially, you have his former offensive coordinator Hackett, a bunch of his former receivers, you got his backup and Boyle. How's that working out? It's not going very well. Aaron Rodgers is going to be 41 years old next season. He was beat up in Green Bay last year when he wasn't very good last season, by the way, either. So they're once again going to put all their eggs into one basket. And J-Lo, I can guarantee you this. Just watch. They're going to make some sort of big splash again in the offseason. I already heard them being linked to Devontae Adams. Maybe they go out and get a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, and there's going to be some optimism once again for the New York Jets. Maybe they finish this season strong. I think two of their last three games come against the Patriots and the Commanders. Maybe Aaron Rodgers comes back and he looks half decent, but I think the Jets are 100% being set up to fail. Saul is not a good head coach. He's a good defensive coordinator. Not a good head coach. So what do you think about that? The Jets are being set up to fail once again in 2024. And by the way, I didn't even mention their offensive line. Are they going to trade offensive lines with the Philadelphia Eagles or something like that? You expect Rodgers to have success behind that line? Take it away.
I, quite honestly, if Aaron Rodgers comes back and he's 75% of what he used to be, it's still a better QB option than what they have or what they could get. And he's probably a better QB option than a lot of the other quarterbacks in the league right now. Have you seen the state of quarterback play in the NFL right now?
Indeed.
It's not very good. It's not very good. I don't think they don't have a choice. There's no eggs. There's no basket. There's just you went in all in on Aaron Rodgers. You know, his recovery looks good. Hopefully you get him back next year and your defense can continue to make plays. I don't think they have a whole lot of wiggle room to bring in much. I don't think they have, you know, they'd have to trade away a lot of draft stock, I guess. They have any left to go and get a big name guy. For me, I'm not a Nathaniel Hackett fan. You know, he's had 10 weeks to figure out something with this offense and just hasn't. And I know he's Aaron Rodgers' buddy, but I don't know if he's the OC to keep this going. Like I said, an Aaron Rodgers at 70 or 75% of what we last saw is still better than probably 70% of the league right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame them for going out and getting Aaron Rodgers. You saw a couple teams taking a shortcut at the quarterback position. The Bucs go out and get Tom Brady. That worked out pretty good. The Rams go out and get Matthew Stafford. That worked out pretty good. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the whole Aaron Rodgers thing, they're just too tied in with this guy. I don't think it's going to work out. Okay, your take on my take number three, the third and final one. Ignore reports when you hear it, whether it be on social media or regular media, that sharp action is coming in on one side. I'm not saying to fade that report. I'm just saying to ignore that. Do not apply that to your handicap. I heard all week, sharp action coming in on the Cleveland Browns. You hear it every week. But one team, sometimes it hits, sometimes it doesn't. You got to keep in mind, if the sharp action already came in on that side, it has already impacted the line. And why are sportsbooks so free and willing to give out this information? Hey, here's all the public bet percentages. They still have to play the game, people. So, J-Lo, what do you think of that? Ignore those type of reports. Do not apply them to your handicap. I'm not saying fade them. I'm just saying ignore them.
Sure. I'm going to say it depends on when and where you hear these things. So I would say for me, when I hear these things before Thursday, before the limits go up, I do take notice. When it's a Monday or Tuesday and there's sharp action, getting in on a number and manipulating the market right away, I will pay attention to those things. Now, whether they go against or go with what I'm looking to bet or what I've already bet in those, it'll prompt me to be like, okay, what am I missing? Or it'll prompt me to say, okay, you're on the right track. I think, you know, you never want to blindly follow or fade those sort of things, but I think that the info is just as valuable as where it's coming from too. So if you hear, like, you know, Pinnacle's not always very forthcoming with the info, but if you hear, like, if you see Pinnacle moving a lot of numbers and you hear that sharp money's coming in on this particular side and you're hearing it from one of those respected sharp books like Pinnacle, it may hold a lot more water than maybe some of these other more mainstream books that cater to more of the casual player. But for, I think for me and you, it's a little different because we eat and sleep, well, not sleep that well, but we eat and breathe and not sleep well with NFL odds. Like, the second they hit on Sunday night, like, I'm monitoring these movements and watching them go and trying to get bets down before they move. You know, it's different for us than the guy that's betting 48 hours before kickoff. In the overall picture of things, and when it comes to sports betting, it's a race for the best information. And I think all information can be valuable. Just it's more valuable coming certain times, and it's more valuable coming from certain sources. So, you know, kind of whittle that down to some reliable options.
Okay. Going to go into college football, Brad Powers, here in a minute, but J-Lo, quickly, some look ahead, some lines that you have your eye on here for week 13. A few that caught my eye: Eagles yesterday, after they ended up beating the Bills, they were -1 at home versus the 49ers. That line is up to Eagles +2.5. I don't think there's a team in the league that comes into Philadelphia and wins a game. We'll discuss that more at another date. So I like the Eagles +2.5, especially that'll be a nice choice on a teaser this week. And Falcons Jets, low number on the total, 34. Not low enough. I like the under on that one. Anything stand out to you for week 13?
Sure. So I do the Bet Now, Bet Later column on Sunday nights, usually around halftime of Sunday Night Football, if you want to look for that. I took Lions -3.5 against the Saints. Not only are the Lions getting the mini bye after that bad taste of Thanksgiving dinner against Green Bay on Thursday, but they get to come inside. They're playing the Saints, and the Saints banged up on both sides of the ball. They got receivers, Olave, he could be out. They've got the defense, their defense is banged up. Lattimore's out, he's on the IR. Cam Jordan as well too is dinged up, so there's a lot of injuries for the Saints team. So I like the Lions -3.5. People undervalue the value of a 4-point spread. It's kind of beyond the 3, 6, 7, 10, those, you know, standard key numbers of football. 4 is that most common margin, and it's becoming a lot more common. So getting below that 4 was important for me to get the Lions -3.5. And then I did look at the Dolphins Commanders over 49.5. The Dolphins can, you know what they can do, Joe. And they're playing a Commanders team that doesn't put up much of a fuss when it comes to defense and just showed their defensive coordinator the door. But Washington, too, can also air it out. So that was 49.5. It's up to 50. What I did bet, though, I bet Miami over their team total 29.5 right out of the chute, knowing that Mike McDaniel doesn't like to take the foot off the gas, and he'll score some points. And then, like I said, Washington not putting up much in the way of defense right now, and Ron Rivera having to take over play calling. So I like the Dolphins over their team total, and I like the Lions -3.5, which is still out there right now, avoiding that 4.
Yes, sir. Yeah, Miami, I think they're due for a 30-point game. Hopefully they get Achane back running the ball in the backfield. Have all their weapons back. Okay, J-Lo, that does it for your Monday appearance here. Great job, as always. Best of luck with those bets. We'll catch you again later on in the week, if I can get my words together. Sharp 600 on Wednesday. Thanks again for joining us. We'll catch you later on.
You're welcome, Joe. Good luck tonight.
Yes, sir. Okay, let us shift gears to our guy down there in sunny Las Vegas. Let's talk some college football. Brad, how are we making out?
Doing well. Thanks for having me as always.
Of course. So let's start like we always do on Monday. Big takeaways from what we saw over the past weekend. Any thoughts? Anything really stand out to you?
Well, I think you got to start with the big game, Ohio State, Michigan. And kudos for Michigan yet again. With multiple injuries to two of their better players during the course of the game. Their guard, which is one of the best offensive linemen in college football, goes down. They score a touchdown right after that. Their All-American cornerback goes down to injury. They're still able to somewhat limit Marvin Harrison Jr. on the Ohio State side. You got an interim coach that was actually aggressive when he needed to be. Three fourth down conversions for them early in the game. And then made some of the right decisions late in the game for them. So you got to be impressed with what Michigan did shorthanded to get their third straight win and cover over the Buckeyes. And, you know, obviously they position themselves very well to make the playoffs, considering they're a 23-point favorite this week in the Big Ten championship game. I think, you know, a couple of the other ones, obviously it's tough to win rivalry week. Washington needed a fourth down, very gutsy call to hold on and beat their rival. And then obviously the Iron Bowl. I mean, Alabama season's on the line, national title on the line for them. Then they're able to convert a fourth and 31, fourth and goal at the 31-yard line for them. So they survive. So survive in advance. But I guess biggest takeaway for the national championship, Joe, would be this might be the first year where we have a legit team left out. Usually, I don't know, the discussion between 4 and 5, it's, you know, is this a legit national title contending team? This year, if the favorites win this week, somebody really good is going to be left out. So, I mean, right now, I would consider, when you look at the odds, I would guess it's Texas, which is unbelievable to me because they have the big win against Alabama on the road. And, I mean, they played a really tough schedule throughout the course of the year. The Big 12 is pretty balanced. So, I think if you want to root for really good semifinal games, you want Florida State to get beat this week. They're not going to leave out an unbeaten conference champ. But this is a Florida State team that's not even the top 15 of my power rankings without their starting quarterback. So if you want really good college football semifinals, let's root for Louisville. Get Florida State out of the mix.
Do you think this bodes well for the future of the college football playoff with it starting to open up here in future years? Because usually, like you kind of mentioned, you know, there's not much debate between the fourth and the fifth team. And sometimes the third team's not very good. And sometimes you see a lot of blowouts, but pretty competitive season this year.
Yeah, it's a really good question. Yeah, I think it does bode well that we're having this discussion because, I mean, we've seen it. I mean, don't believe me. We've seen two touchdown point spreads in the semifinal games. We've seen multiple blowouts. So the fact that we might have a legitimate team left out says that maybe we have a little bit more competitive balance. We'll see what ends up happening. I think Georgia and Michigan still maybe separate themselves, and we'll see on Oregon as well. I think they're really good. But I think this does bode well starting next year with 12 teams.
Okay, just in case the viewers are curious, Michigan is the favorite. These odds from DraftKings, plus 190 from them. Georgia not far behind, plus 210. Oregon, plus 500. Alabama and Texas, plus 900. Then a bit of a drop-off. Washington, 16-1. Florida State, 25-1. Ohio State, 40-1. Let's touch on Heisman here really quick, Brad. It looks like it's Bo Nix's award to lose. Minus 160 at DraftKings. You think he locks it up here?
Yeah. I think there's just so much correlation with this. I mean, if you like Oregon this week, then you got to be betting Bo Nix to win the Heisman as well. And if you don't want to lay a 9.5-point spread, but you're pretty confident Bo Nix is going to have success and Oregon's going to win the game, and you don't want to lay the big money line favorite on Oregon, well, just, you know, lay minus 160 on Bo Nix to win the Heisman in that regard. So instead of laying the big money line price on Oregon to beat Washington. So I think there's correlation there. If you don't like Oregon's chances, if you think, hey, that's a big spread, I like this Washington team, I think, you correlate that with Jaden Daniels winning the Heisman. Because if Washington has success, if Bo Nix doesn't have a good game, then Jaden Daniels is going to win the Heisman. It's a two-guy race right now. Either one of those guys would be the Heisman winner.
Okay, a team I want to ask you about here before we get into your best bet that you're giving out on the show today. So the first couple of weeks of you coming on the show here to talk college football, I think we were talking about this team 3 or 4 times a week. Yeah. Of course, it is the Colorado Buffaloes. They were the hottest story in the sport. Since then, they've completely plummeted off a cliff, completely irrelevant. I'm someone who casually follows college football on the Saturday. I just don't hear them mentioned anymore for good reason, because they're doing nothing but losing. But to be fair, you know, not a whole lot was necessarily expected of them coming into the season. They did build up all that hype, then it fell off a cliff. So looking at them going into next season, do you think they can build off of what they built at the start of this season, at least? Do you see success in their future going forward?
Yeah, obviously, I was pretty pessimistic on Colorado for the last year. I think even producer Mick has a clip of me. I think this is in like early October. I said, I don't think they'll win another game. And thankfully, that ended up, you know, coming to fruition. They didn't win another game the rest of the season after the Stanford loss. With that being said, they still exceeded a little bit of my expectations. I didn't expect them to be competitive in a lot of these games. A lot of their losses were competitive. I'll give them credit in that regard. I just think there was way too many of the casuals coming into the place and pumping this team up like they were a contender. And what they were was, you know, a 4-8 team that was much improved from last year. Let's give them credit. Now, can they take the next step? I think they can, but I mean, I really think it's too early to tell, because I think the roster is going to get shaken up again. Let's see if Prime even stays at this point. I mean, he's obviously up for different coaching jobs, but if I had to guess, he will. He doesn't want his son transferring again. He'll stay at least one more year at Colorado. Coaching staff's getting shook up already for them. Recruiting's not going well, but we'll see. They're a type of school that likes to flip guys late, and then they'll be heavy in the portal. So, and they're going to a new conference. So many question marks. I'll say this. I'm guessing I'm going to be more pessimistic than Joe Casual Fan on Colorado, where I think they can become a bowl team next year, a 6-7 win team, which should be celebrated. But I think a lot of other people are going to have higher expectations than that on Colorado.
Okay, let's get into the best bets you're going to give out. Of course, we don't have the loaded schedule like we typically do coming up this week, so we will have more bets to get into on your appearance on Thursday's show. But one that you want to jump on right away, Boise State, UNLV, we have a 2.5-point spread. Who do you like in this one?
Yeah, keep in mind, obviously, we normally dealing with 60 games a week. We're down to 10, so that's why I don't have three or four picks today. But let's lay the 2.5 with Boise State. Here's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing a Boise State team that's resurgent under their interim coach. It was addition by subtraction without Andy Avalos getting fired. We saw it with players coming back, magically returning from injury, guys that wanted to transfer out, want back on the team. So that was a bad situation, and they responded accordingly. And I think just generally speaking, this Boise State team's underrated. Look at their close losses. Loss on a last-second field goal against UCF. Loss on a blocked field goal return for a touchdown on the road against Memphis. Had a very misleading final against Fresno State on the road. I mean, changed a couple plays in their season, and we think, hey, this is just same old Boise State clear-cut, the best team in the Mountain West. Meanwhile, UNLV's playing with expectations now. They were favored against a really good San Jose State team last week at home. Got beat. Now they're facing an even better team in Boise State. I'm just not sure this young team with a first-year coach can handle these types of expectations. They're kind of playing out of their level. They have been all year. But, I mean, keep in mind, this is a bottom 10 program in the country that just had this magical season. It comes to an end on Saturday afternoon in Vegas.
Now, before we let you go, I got to ask you, so we're going from around 60 games a week to 10 this week. Do you like this point of the season where you're absolutely blasted for a couple months and then a little bit of a lighter workload? So are you happy we're at this point of the season?
Yeah, I can maybe sleep an extra half hour, an hour a night. So, yeah, I kind of am. I love college football, but especially in a season, let's be honest, I haven't been good on these best bets. So it hasn't been a great season. So part of me is like, mercifully, this is coming to an end. I will say this. Bowl season's completely different. So I get rejuvenated in bowl season because it's an entirely different handicap.
Yes, indeed. So, yeah, Brad will be with us throughout the entirety of bowl season. So we'll get into all of that when we get there. But until Thursday, Brad, we'll have you back on the show then to discuss a bunch of these big games. So best of luck with your handicapping for those games throughout the week. Thanks again for joining us, and we will catch you then on Thursday.
Thanks for having me, as always.
Yes, sir. The man right there. Lively chat today. People chiming in. Guys, let us know if you're in the live chat right now, what your best bets are for the Monday Night Football game, for the NBA, and for some of these big games coming up this weekend in college football. And just a reminder, if you like the work we do here at Covers, make sure you hit that subscribe button right down there. Lots of great content. Covering basically everything that there is to cover. We do a great job covering the NHL, UFC, and the NBA as well. So let's get into the NBA right now. Let's bring in my guy, the second half of the Sweet Boys, Now, for complete transparency, John, we had no sweeps last week, but we did combine to go 7-2 with our pick. So they can call us the kind of sweep boys,
almost,
I guess.
Almost sweep boys.
Yeah, and we were talking about this before going to air. Now, we only have two big picks between us tonight. If we go 2-0, you can't call that a sweep. A 2-0 is not a sweep. It's kind of cheap when you're saying a 2-0 is a sweep. Am I right on that?
Yeah, for sure. It's always at least three for me. Got to have at least three.
Yeah, you got to have at least three to call the sweep, people. Come on. Okay, so a couple bets. Let's discuss the in-season tournament. No one loves the in-season tournament more than John Mettler does. So bring us up to speed on this thing, John. It ends tomorrow, the non-playoff part of it. Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, the group stage ends tomorrow. We've had two teams advance. The Pacers and the Lakers are already, they're already through. So there's a couple teams that like are basically almost through, but there's a lot of tiebreakers at play too. So I'm going to bring up three teams here because we're kind of going to see something we've never really even seen before. So the first team is the Boston Celtics. So they lost to the Orlando Magic on Friday. They lost by quite a bit. So they're in trouble now from like a point differential standpoint. So usually when you bet spreads in sports betting, you know, if you're betting a team to win by 10.5, the thing is always, you know, the team's just trying to win. They're not trying to win by 10.5. And they're not trying to help you win your bet, essentially. This is kind of, we have the opposite scenario. We don't get this pretty much ever. So the Celtics need to win tomorrow by 23 points to pass the Magic. The Magic are idle. So the Celtics know the number. So they're also playing the Bulls, which, so it's possible. There's other kind of tiebreakers in there too, because they also need the Nets to win against the Raptors. So, but the Nets is a little more complicated. But for the Celtics, I'm super curious to see what they're going to price the spread of 22.5 at, because I guarantee, like in their locker room on the whiteboard, that number is circled. Like they have to win by that amount. So this is like the first time ever you could play a big alternate spread, and they're trying to get to that number. The second team I kind of want to touch on is the Houston Rockets. So it's kind of interesting. The Pelicans are priced at plus 1,400 to win the tournament. The Rockets are plus 4,400. The Pelicans are out if the Rockets win. I don't think they're the odds of fully like grasp that, just because they have a big point differential too, but they're 1 point below the Suns. So the Suns will move in instead of them. If the Rockets beat the Mavs, Rockets win the group, Rockets move on. So it's very simple for the Rockets. They've posted the line for tomorrow. Rockets are plus 180 on the money line at the Mavericks. The Rockets are also plus 220 to win the group at some sports books. So that doesn't align, because if they win, they win the group. The other flip side of that is Luka Doncic hurt his wrist in their last game. He had his wrist taped up. I kind of think there's an opportunity. I'm probably going to place it when I get off the air here to bet that plus 220. You're essentially getting a money line on the Rockets. The Mavericks have nothing to play for in the in-season tournament. You're getting a money line. And I also think you're getting a really good money line, because if Doncic is out, that spread's moving, right? So you're kind of like jumping a market before it's even posted. The third team I want to touch on is the Minnesota Timberwolves. So this isn't a bet you can place, but it might be a bet you can get out of. So I personally bet on the Timberwolves to win this tournament at like plus 2,500 before the season even started. They're basically out. They have to beat the Thunder by 38. So can they even beat the Thunder? Thunder are a really good team. It's not like the Celtics are playing the Bulls. It's a completely different scenario. They could win by less, but they need help from the Warriors with how they beat the Kings. The Timberwolves are really up against it to get out of the group now, just because of how they lost the Kings on Friday. The thing is, there's some sportsbooks trade. I don't know where you bet it. So I bet mine at a sportsbook that doesn't offer the cash out. So I'm out a unit. But some sportsbooks are trading them at like plus 2,200 to still win this tournament. If you're at a sportsbook that is offering a cash out and that number's still there and you grab like plus 2,500 and it's plus 2,200 and you can get out of it, I probably would. they're not advancing. So like DraftKings has them at 80-1. So I don't know. Some sportsbooks have very different opinions here on the Timberwolves. I would just, if you have a bet on the Timberwolves, I'd go check that out. You might be able to get out of this bet.
Yeah, definitely a market you could take advantage of. And I love how they factor in point differential or point margin into how the in-season tournament works. I saw DeMar DeRozan throwing a hissy fit. I think it was against the Raptors because they were jacking up a three at the end. He probably, what is going on in the NBA between Popovich getting on the microphone and telling the fans not to boo and DeRozan throwing a hissy fit because the Raptors are trying to get more score to improve their place in the in-season tournament? A bit ridiculous, but let's get into our best bets here for tonight, John. I'm going to get us started with the Lakers plus 6. They are in Philadelphia tonight. Now, LeBron is questionable, but he's been on the injury report for most of the season. He's only missed one game. This is not the second game of a back-to-back either, so not overwhelmingly concerning for me. I do expect him to play. So check out these teams over the last 10 games. Statistically, the Lakers have been the much better team, and we could get them at plus six here, especially offensively. Effective field goal shooting percentage over the last 10, 6 versus 25th in favor of Los Angeles, who is also locking down on defense. 6 in opponent EFG in that 10-game sample size, 8th and points allowed per 100 possessions, easily better than Philly in each of those categories. And the 76ers, they've looked pretty mediocre versus good competition this season, beating up a lot of bad teams, 100%, but outright losses to the Bucks, Celtics, T-Wolves, close wins versus the Celtics and the Thunder. So they could very well win this game, but I don't really see them pulling away. So I'll take the Lakers plus six. John, you have a weirdo bet. I love a weirdo bet because they often cash when you give them out. What are you looking at tonight?
I'm Malcolm Brogdon under 7.5 assists at minus 141. So Brogdon's taking on the Pacers. So a couple things with Brogdon. His last two games, he's had 8 and 12 assists, which has pushed his number up to 7.5 here for the total. He's also playing against the Pacers, which everyone knows very fast, lots of scoring. So that's also pushing his number up. But I actually think there's more reasons that Brogdon's going to see less minutes tonight. So for one, Brogdon's not someone the Blazers are planning on keeping. He's an asset they kind of need to protect. They're going to trade him at the trade deadline. And he's just coming back from a hamstring injury. So last night, you know, you're back-to-back. They're on a back-to-back. They played the Bucks tough. They almost beat the Bucks. He played 34 minutes. You're also traveling, cold weather. This is all kind of like factored in. But the thing that I think even is more impactful to why I think he'll see less minutes tonight is that Scoot Henderson's back as well. So not only is Brogdon back from injury, Scoot Henderson's back. They've kind of been easing him in. I think they're trying to get his confidence up. Chauncey Billups keeps talking about that a lot. This is a game where Scoot Henderson could thrive with the way he plays. You know, he's super fast. He's downhill. There's not going to be much resistance from this Pacers defense. I would think this, if I'm Chauncey Billups, this is a game where I want to absolutely throw Scoot Henderson out there and just run so much stuff for him and he can get 20 plus points or whatever. And none of his props were posted when I was betting this, but I just think this is a Scoot Henderson game. I don't think it's a Brogdon game. And when there's so much pace, you don't necessarily need Brogdon creating offense for everyone in the half court. Everyone's going to be able to score against the Pacers. I just think they really push Henderson tonight, which I also think brings Brogdon's minutes down. 7.5 is a big number for Brogdon. I know the minus 141 people won't love that. So there is, you can, when I was betting it this morning, there was no alternate lines available. I'm totally fine. If you want to go 6.5 at plus money, I would do that too. It just wasn't available when I was checking this morning. This is all I had to work was with the 7.5. So if you're looking at 6.5, I have the 6.5 under price at minus 105. So if you can do better than that, so like plus 110, plus 115, plus 120, you can go under 6.5 too if you don't want the under 7.5.
Yeah, a lot of people got to realize if just because something has minus 140 as the odds, that doesn't mean it's not good value. A lot of people think good value means plus 300 and plus 400. But that said, I do understand how if someone's throwing 20 bucks down, how minus 140 might not appeal to them. But those minus 140 bets that you're getting a good value on, that can add up over the course of a season. So just keep that in mind. It's the sports betting thing. It's not a get rich quick scheme like a lot of people want it to be. Okay, John, that's it. We'll have more games to discuss on Thursday. Hopefully you haven't looked at the schedule, but hopefully we'll have some better options, some slim pickings here tonight. But best of luck with that bet. And hopefully we can continue our winning ways here on Before You Bet.
See you on Thursday.
Yes, sir. The man right there checking in on the live chat, Luke Murphy. Apparently he did not listen to a thing that John said. I like Brogdon's points over tonight. Okay. John, Luke very well might be right on that. He could go over his total and not go under his assist total there as well. So yeah, we thank all of you guys for chiming in the live chat today. Great show today. Good live viewership. Recap of my bets. I like the first quarter under. Weird bet, low number. 7.5, but the Minnesota Vikings are 10-0-1 to the first quarter under this season, and I like Madison to go over his receiving yard total. The Bears are the worst team in the NFL when it comes to allowing receiving yards to running backs. J-Lo, a couple props. He likes Herbert to go over his receiving yard total, and he likes DJ Moore to go over his receiving yard total. as well. Luke Murphy chiming back in. Yeah, heard the minutes idea. Okay, there we go. So yeah, we are going to leave it at that. Great show today. Hopefully we can continue our winning ways, bring in that momentum from the weekend. It was a great weekend. We had a great Thanksgiving here across covers as a company. The boys giving out some great picks here. So yeah, in and out like that 40-minute show today. Fun Monday night football game tonight. Some good NBA action as well. So best of luck with all your bets, guys. Unless, of course, you're fading us. We will catch you again on Thursday show. Same time, same place, right here on YouTube.com.